shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip on Sputnik International with me, John Gaunt. I've got a guest today who loves to shoot from the lip. In fact, he's got so many opinions and he's probably even more opinionated than me. Who is he? Well, it's Johnny Gould, the radio and TV broadcaster. Today, we will, of course, talk about the Brexit fiasco. Are we ever going to get out? We'll talk through all the implications. But also, I want to talk about Jeremy Corbyn and I want to talk about anti-Semitism, particularly within Labour. And is this country divided? Is politics completely broken? Without further ado, let's introduce Mr. Johnny Gould.
Shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon, Johnny.
John, good afternoon to you.
Okay then, Johnny. So where do we start? Let's talk about the pantomime of all these Brexit votes. What did you make of it?
It was a victory of 6 minutes in duration, which then came to a Pyrrhic victory for Theresa May, who at least has put Parliament at bay. It's the first time ever that the House of Commons has reached a consensus that is a majority behind her ability to go back to the European negotiator Michel Barnier and try to renegotiate the Irish backstop. However, Barnier, the chief negotiator for the European Union, has said today, he's reaffirmed what was said by Twitter last night, that the Irish backstop will not be renegotiated. So if there is a customs border and we drop out, I'm not going to say crash out like all the Ramonas do, but if we drop out of the European Union without a deal, then the border will be on the Republic of Ireland's side and not ours.
Let's just clarify that for a moment, if we can, Johnny. You were a Brexiteer, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Why?
A massive amount of reasons. It all kind of started with me being an instinctive Briton, if you like. When Americans used to say to me, oh, I'm going to Europe, we're going to have a great time, I said, you mean continental Europe? Britain is not exactly in Europe. I felt myself saying that all the way through sort of the millennium and beyond it. And that's how I feel about it. I mean, to be absolutely brutally frank, let's start from the top. My grandparents were refugees to this country in 1939 after Kristallnacht in Vienna. And when they came here, they became British, despite having very broad, thick Viennese accents. My grandpa's business was called Britannia Typewriters. My uncle's middle name is Winston. And my grandma used to talk about being very proud to be British. And it was this beautiful idea that whether you're brown or black or yellow or Jewish or Hindu, you can be British, a bit like, you know, being an American. And this is an amazing gift that we gave, I think, to the Anglo-Saxon world, America included. You know, with the best will of the world, you can't be a Turkish German, can you? Even though they try, there are great divisions there. There are tensions here too. But what is undeniable is when you have a British passport, you are accepted as British without any hint of snicker from anyone.
And you think that's important, do you? That when people come to live in this country, like your relatives, that they do fully integrate and become British. Keep their culture. They don't have to assimilate, but they have to fit in, yeah?
We are talking about multiculturalism, aren't we, John, you and I? And that is a scourge. It is something that you and I think, don't believe in. We
No,
and I'm the same as you. I think it's actually a danger. I think multiculturalism is morphing into intersectional racism, and vehicles of intersectional racism are things like black and minority ethnic pushing for jobs, which is a suppression of white people. This idea of white privilege, of all the white people I know, only about 1% of white people I know are privileged. The other 99% are sort of normal people, aren't they? So, you know, it's an absurdity. It's offensive. And by the way, I am, you know, to some people not white and to other people not a minority ethnic. So I can tell you now that it is a form of institutionalized racism. So to be British, to me, the classic sense of being British is something I truly, truly am grateful for. And my parents were literally disqualified from being European. And when I spoke yesterday, you know that I was on the telly with Yasmin Alibi Brown. She continued to lecture me after the, you know, into the commercial break, where she said to me, and I quote, you know, from your background, you should know better than being a Brexiteer. Nationalism is a dangerous thing. She's confusing nationalism with far right nationalism in my book, which, of course, is a dangerous thing. Far right nationalism is a danger. But basic principles of nationhood are a great principle. And I told her my European grandparents were disqualified from that. And she said, oh, they're different in Europe now. And I said, you are confusing social democracy with liberal democracy. And I think I've had quite enough of that.
I would like to see that on the telly. There needs to be more discussion like that, but there's not a cat in the house chance of that happening in the MSM. So you're British. So therefore, when you voted for Brexit, I mean, I voted for a Brexit because I'm not ashamed to say it. I wanted to control immigration. I wanted to have our own laws. I wanted us to decide who could and could not live here, what sentences people would get if they committed a misdemeanor. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I wanted to wrap myself in our flag. I am English, British, and I am European, but I am not anti-European. I'm just anti the EU. Are you in a similar kind of frame of mind?
Yeah, let's unpack that for a moment. I mean, you know, let's just establish for once and for all, I think we both agree that the European Union is not Europe.
Yep.
And so therefore, we are both, you know, happy, proud to go on holiday to Italy, drink a bit of Spanish wine, you know, have a bit of fun in Europe. But the European Union is not that. I am what you might class as a metropolitan Brexiteer. And given my proclivities to my past, I am not particularly anti-immigrant. I'm pro-immigrant, given all the kind of positive things that that have come to this country.
So what I am well-controlled, yeah, exactly. Managed immigration has been great for this country.
Exactly. What I am very anti is mass immigration, uncontrolled immigration, and it threatens the very existence of the European Union, given the wars across Iraq and Syria. Major, major disasters, even to Christmas in Strasbourg, the Barcelona problems, the disaster of La Rambla I'm talking about there. We're talking about Ariana Grande. We're talking about Southwark Bridge. We're talking about Westminster. We're talking about foiled plots which never made the news. You know, these are very, very serious tensions created, and they bring with them a lack of sensitivity to our British history. In Britain, we fought damn hard for our freedoms. They weren't imposed on us. They were trial and error. The ideas of freedom and democracy, which Britain syndicated around the world, are very much things that were fought over, I don't know, 600-700 years in this country. And as if there's an acid test to prove what I'm saying, the Commonwealth is something that this Queen, our Queen, has been extremely successful in building. And, you know, the mother country, people snicker at that, you know, but there is a relationship that the Windies have with Britain, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. You know, we all speak the same language. Okay, there are tensions in terms of the Republican movement in Australia. But, you know, go to Paraguay and ask them what they think of Spain. They don't have a Commonwealth like us. They're all called José Manuel Carrigo, but they all hate the mother country because it isn't one.
Well, let's just look at that for a moment, if we can, Johnny. So even though you are from immigrant stock, so to speak, you do believe in controlling immigration. Well, if that's the case, what do you make of all those people like Gary Lineker, J.K. Rowling, Lily Allen, who are telling us to let all refugees, all asylum seekers in?
Well, that's the luxury of peacetime. They don't know how lucky they are. It's just as simple as that. I mean, and also, I'm as British as you are. That's the other thing I want to say. And, you know, the Gould part of my family were in Birmingham for four generations. So we go back to sort of 1866. And I bet you your bottom dollar, you know, you walk down the street in Birmingham and most people haven't been there four generations, including most of the white people who are probably of Irish Catholic background. You know, it's we're all the same.
Okay.
And so, if you unpack it like that.
Okay. Let's go back, if we can, to Brexit for a moment. I mean, obviously, Theresa May has basically got to go back now to the EU. She's kind of got permission to do that from the Commons, but she's now got to do a U-turn worthy of Jeremy Clarkson or Stig. And she's going to go to Brussels or Strasbourg and try and persuade them to go her way and convince them to take away the Irish backstop. Well, there's basically two hopes there, Johnny. Bob Hope and No Hope, in my humble opinion. She's going to come back, you watch it, and she'll say the clock has run down. It's now no deal or my deal. Well, I've got no problem with no deal, apart from the fact I don't like the terminology, because it's just us leaving on WTO rules. And that was always on the table, wasn't it?
It was, and now I think it's a gambit, John. I mean, I don't think any of us particularly want a no deal. Wouldn't it be wonderful that our first foreign trade deal would be with the European Union? We've got a lot of work to do. I know that Israel is going to be one of the first nations to step into the breach, and what a fantastic country that is to add to British foreign trade. And I mean, that really would be a massive achievement. In my opinion, it's greater than all the 27 European countries put together, including Germany, because of all the massive agricultural and technological advancements that are going on at a lightning speed, the integrity of dealing with, you know, with diseases as well. You know, there's talk about cancer being cured there, and I absolutely believe them when they say that. So, you know, there will be a technological disruption in no deal. I mean, I'm not going to be one of those blind faith, hardline Brexiteers who say, no, you know, a no deal is fine. You know,
but Johnny,
it's dangerous.
I'm not bothered about that. Yesterday, we had Sky News telling us there could be food shortages. The girl who was presenting it was getting carried away, Samantha Jane or whatever her name is. But don't you remember when we couldn't get bread in the 70s? We've been here before. Or the sugar problem, or even the potato shortage when you couldn't get any chips with your fish. And our parents got over it, even with rationing back in the war. And then today, of course, there's nothing in the papers about it because there hasn't been a run on the supermarkets. Most ordinary people know this is just BS.
I mean, I totally agree with you. There's no point in stockpiling. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, notwithstanding food miles and the sort of issues of saving the planet, you know, we can pick out tomatoes from other countries just outside the European Union as well, and broccoli and various other things. And, hey, if we've suddenly become so reliant on a European-based economy that only 60% of our self-sufficiency is the history of the last 40 years of the European Union, let's use 75% of our agricultural land in growing some tatties. Let's start building, recalibrating our bloody economy outside of London.
Yeah, also as well, how about just eating veg that's in season, John, other than strawberries maybe on Christmas Day or tomatoes in from Spain that are just completely tasteless? But let's go forward on this. She's going to come back, in my opinion, with no decision. Her deal is going to be thrown out. What do you think will happen next? And do you worry about it or even about her?
Well, you know, they've stood fast, and I understand why the European Union have taken that position, because they don't want anyone else dropping out of their rather flimsy and dangerous project. I mean, let's put it into perspective. It's a real bluff at the moment, because their most emboldened exponent of the European Union is facing a riot every Saturday afternoon in Paris each week, isn't he? And, you know, Merkel's on her way out. I can't believe she's still Chancellor, but there you go.
Yes, Johnny, but Italy is collapsing. And as you know, Spain is on the verge of bankruptcy. And France, as you were saying, well, it's not just happening in Paris, is it? These riots, and the MSM are keeping it quiet. It's kind of the same scenario for them if we leave, especially with the £39 billion we're supposed to give them. Do you think the politicians have let us down? I mean, people talk about Theresa May betraying us, because I think they've all betrayed us. Two-thirds of them didn't even want Brexit, and I think they've been doing all they can to stop it. Do you think there could be trouble on the streets here, like in Paris, Johnny?
I think we're built of different things. There will be a right-wing narrative of betrayal if the 29th of March is not honoured. And I think it is in the interests of our ruling establishment to bloody well get on board and get us out on the 29th of March with a deal with the European Union. And remember that Germany still wants to sell us BMWs. Italy still wants to sell us red and white wine. France wants to sell us, I don't know, Daft Punk, whatever they do in France now. And, you know, let's make sure that we get our first trade deal of some sort which honours the Brexit vote as best as we can on the 29th of March.
You're listening to Shooting from the Lip with my special guest today, Johnny Gould, on Sputnik International. Don't you dare go away. We've got plenty more coming your way. straight after this.
Shooting from the Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, Shooting from the Lip.
Hi, welcome back to Shooting from the Lip with my special guest today, Johnny Gould. This is Sputnik International. OK, let's just hold on those things you were saying about Brexit. Give me a bit more on that, Johnny. Do you think we're going to be out on March the 29th? Because I do not.
Really, do you not? I'm an optimist, and I think we actually have quite a bit of time left, don't we? What, 57 days or so? I think we can do it. I think the pressure is on Theresa May. She holds all the cards. She had a massive victory, didn't she, a couple of days ago? And I think that playing that gambit of keeping no deal on the table, which is absolutely essential to our negotiation with Germany in particular, because let's face it, Germany is the power broker in the European Union. They're going to want a deal as much as we want one. And the same goes for Spain, you know, just emerging into recession. They want to continue exporting to us. And also Leo Varadkar in the Republic of Ireland, you know, this border neighbour of ours, you know, it's absolutely critical. You know, he can look south all he wants, but it's the north that really is his key market.
Well, I'm not going to disagree. Absolutely right. But let's leave that for now. Let's get on to this anti-Semitism row. I suppose the reason the Conservatives got together, the one thing that unites them, is they don't want Jeremy Corbyn in number 10. And secondly, I've got to ask you this as a British Jew. Do you believe Corbyn is ever going to shake off this anti-Semitism row? What's your views, as I say, a British Jew?
Jeremy Corbyn is an anti-Semite. Jeremy Corbyn is a racist, and he defies everything that I understand about Britain, what I was taught of, what I was brought up with in the Midlands, which is a hallowed area, a place of great affection for me, the West Midlands, Birmingham, the Black Country is where I am from, and everything he stands for is a contravention of what I think we all believe in.
That is a very serious charge, though. You're calling him a racist and anti-Semite. Back that up.
The people he called Riyad Saleh an extremist cleric, an honoured citizen of where? He called his friends Hamas and Hezbollah, and he said that we should talk to our enemies unconditionally at the same time as saying, oh, I've got a few conditions to talk to the Prime Minister, who is a very decent person when it comes to issues of relationship with the Jewish people. The establishment, to be fair, although they haven't been particularly vocal and told him to shut his gob, have done tacit support for the Jewish community. I saw Camilla, Charles's missus, go to an old Jewish day centre and have a little tango, doing the Hava Nagila, doing the Hora the other day. Very nice. Archbishop George Carey, who I wish he was still the Archbishop, he's the retired one, he spoke up against anti-Semitism. Listen, it's not just me saying, it was Patricia Hodge behind the Speaker's chair, as we well know, very famously. And George Carey said, I think deep down, Jeremy Corbyn is an anti-Semite. He's consorted throughout his career. He has never said, I spoke to Ewan Phillips last week, he being the spokesperson for Labour Against Anti-Semitism. He's not Jewish. He's never been to Israel. He just thinks it's antithetical to all that he believes in as well. And he is a lifelong, I don't know, socialist stroke social democrat. I don't quite know.
But isn't it a little bit like a sixth form socialist, you know, where they've got a tick box of what they believe in, you know, feminism or whatever. And one thing they also don't believe in is, of course, is Israel. And of course, these socialists always mix up Israel with Jewish. And then it all just comes out with this anti-Semite nonsense. Corbyn's never grown up, Johnny, has he?
No.
Do you follow what I'm trying to say? I'm not trying to lessen the offence, but
I think that's a generous view of him, because I think what he's done is he's taken National Socialism from the fringes of society and put it on the front benches of the opposition, and I'm not exaggerating there.
All right, so he's not fit to be Prime Minister?
He's not fit to be an MP. He's not fit to be in public office.
Okay. So, and how deep does this problem go? Not with just within the Labour Party, but do you think in British society? I mean, Rachel Riley, who I've worked with several times on Countdown, I find her a charming woman, a highly intelligent woman as well. She's had to suffer this. What do you make of that then, Johnny?
I think what she's doing is exceptional because she fights literally hourly against the filth, the sewer that appears on Twitter so very, very much. And I thought it was very telling when she was interviewed by Krishnan Gurumurthy a couple of weeks ago on Channel 4, when he said, so what do your bosses at Countdown think of all this? Because, of course, it's gone through my mind and your mind too as a professional. She's going to get the sack here. You know, she can't just be the maths genius. You know, every time someone looks at her on the screen, they're going to think about this Twitter thing. And you know what she said? She said, I haven't really thought about it, because she is a conviction. She believes in it. This isn't a scourge particularly against Labour. They can't throw smear at her. This is about all kinds of anti-Semitism from both the left and the right. And if I'm to describe what leftist anti-Semitism is, it is fear of the elite. And right-wing anti-Semitism is fear of the other.
So how do we challenge it? Obviously, we're applauding her work, Rachel, but do you think it's being taken with less seriousness than, say, for example, Islamophobia, whatever that means?
Yeah, and I think what we have to do is unpack these two words, because anti-Semitism is not Islamophobia. They're not equal things, because Islamophobia is used by Islamic extremists to create an apologist culture for some extreme forms of Islam, whereas anti-Semitism is a battle that Jews have to take on, which is not of their choice. I think that is the critical definition difference between the two phobias.
So why is there a phobia, or why do people, some people, hate Jews? Where's that come from?
Oh, God, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's like kind of, you know, I think it's like your brother, Ash. Somebody attacked him on a forum on the internet a few days ago. I picked the idiot up on it. And this troll thinks it's perfectly all right to talk about your brother in that anti-Semitic, anti-Jew terminology. I mean, I can think of loads of ways to insult Ash and indeed James Whale. But I wouldn't get down to the fact that he's Jewish. I didn't even know he was, to be honest, even when I worked with him. Do you understand what I'm trying to say, Johnny? The casualness about it. I just don't understand it. I just don't get it.
No, I don't get it either. And I have to tell you, it has sullied my relationship with my beautiful country the last year. It's really upset me. And, you know, I don't want that to prosper. I want to live here for the rest of my life.
But because there are reports of Jewish people leaving, aren't there? Just tell me, there's some big story breaking again in Labour as well, you were mentioning before. You reckon there's somebody else, in the BBC, sorry, who has been subjected to this anti-Semitism as well, this Semitism, yeah?
A Jewish woman who has not been identified, her Facebook entry was scrubbed out in terms of who she was, says she met a Labour grandee of the House of Lords, a well-known character, who started coming up with some deeply anti-Semitic tropes at her. She wasn't a political reporter. This was some kind of, I don't know, lifestyle piece of journalism that she was doing. And it sort of swayed into politics, as I guess it might do if you're talking to a Labour grandee. And she said, I can't report it and I can't identify who he is, because if I do that, I'm going to lose my job. And we cannot be living in East Germany. We have to out this person and we have to be big and brave and bold. And at this very moment, John, I'm trying to work out how I can help.
Okay.
Because we can't stop this.
Now, there was much talk during this whole Brexit pantomime that politics is in the gutter, democracy is broken, and that we have a divided country. What do you think, Johnny? Is the UK divided? And was it divided even before Brexit on these kinds of grounds, these racist grounds?
I think geographically, John, the country, the country has been divided. A lot, and you and I know this, where we're from. When I came down to live in London in 1988, you know, London was obviously the most expensive place to live in terms of property. It was probably, if you like, double the price of Birmingham for your average house in a suburban district to a similar one in Birmingham. And now it's 5, 6, and 7 times the amount.
Yeah.
So the casino wheel has benefited London, and places like Birmingham and Manchester and Liverpool and Middlesbrough have been forgotten. But worse than that, John, it's the associated areas around those big cities, like the Black Country, like those places, Dewsbury and Rotherham,
yep,
that have got even worse. And I know this because I watch it when I go home to Birmingham. And people don't seem to understand that the world out there in Britain is seriously stressed by these tensions. And what a bunch of schmucks David Cameron and his boys were to have that referendum, because as my mate Martin Daubney said, being a North Nottinghamshire miner's son, he said, I'm going to predict Brexit even before it happens, something even Nigel Farage wasn't able to do, because he was from that stock who knew.
Absolutely.
A patriotic Labour voting.
Just left behind.
Royalist.
Yeah.
Left behind. You know, these are the people that fought the First World War. You know, these are the men and women who gave us the rod, the backbone, the consensus. And, you know, forget them at your peril.
Okay, so let's finish up now, Johnny, by talking about Twitter. I've got a bee in my bonnet at the moment about anonymity. I don't understand why people can be anonymous on Twitter and then just say the most horrific things, whether it's anti-Semitic things, whether it's personal things. You know, there's libel, slander going on there every day of the week, and Twitter are doing sod all about it. What's your view?
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, it's an international business and it's on a false prospectus. It cannot be a syndication of hate speech. We all believe in the concepts of free speech, but even free speech has its red lines, and Twitter crosses it every single second of every single day. And if it's to be a serious business, and it is a serious medium, Twitter's very important in what it does. It gives voice to so many people in so many different spheres. I mean, we've got the world's biggest troll on there, you know, Donald Trump. But you know,
but at least you know it's Donald Trump, and you can argue with Trump. What annoys me is that, you know, I'm on there with my own name on Twitter, you're on there with your own name, and Twitter shouldn't be allowing these anonymous cases or anonymous names. Why should somebody be able to attack you without giving their real name? I understand all the thing about we need it for whistleblowers and the rest, but fundamentally, Twitter should be somewhere for debate, and you should always know who you are debating with.
100%.
Shouldn't you?
And indeed, Facebook is more controlled. I mean, when people come out with racist slurs, at least you know who they are. Whereas, you know, you can have a picture of a, you know, bacon and eggs, and, you know, someone with an at tag of XYZ1234. Spewing stuff up with a hashtag which is read by hundreds of thousands of
Absolutely.
People. So, yes, they have to deal with that. The anonymity thing is wrong because, you know, this is not free speech, John. It is hate speech. And we need to be clear on that.
Okay, last comment, very short. Are you optimistic for the future of this country?
Always.
That was very short. Johnny Gould, thank you very much indeed. That's Johnny Gould, the social commentator and, of course, TV and radio broadcaster. Got a comment on that? Feel free to make it on our website. That's the end of this edition of Shooting From The Lip with me, John Gould, on Sputnik International. We'll be back next week with another brilliant guest. Please make sure you join us. Thanks very much for listening.
Shooting From The Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting From The Lip.